Through the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app on the ride home. Glad that you're with me, Jonathan Hood. Phone line is open for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. It's our telephone number. Hit me up on Instagram as well. IGJ Hood is where you can find me. We're on because we have got a Northwestern basketball that will be at 7:45 with the pregame 8 o'clock tip right here on ESPN 1000. So we're on an hour earlier than normal. Glad to have you in with us here on this Wednesday. You know, there are two faces of the ineptitude for the Chicago Bulls that are 19-36. There are six games in the rear when it comes to this losing streak. They are in 10th place in the Eastern Conference. So they have slid right into the All-Star break with a six-game losing streak and not playing well. And for the most part, if you take a look at this season, they have not played well at all. But there are two faces of this ineptitude on the floor, and that is Zach LaVine and Jim Boylan. And I want to be able to accentuate and underline on the floor, there are two faces of this problem with the Bulls. Zach LaVine has become Reggie Theus as a player. For those that remember the Chicago Bulls before Michael Jordan, Reggie Theus was the man. California cool. He had a terrific, terrific look to him. An all-star, terrific scorer. But here's the thing. Just like Zach LaVine, Reggie Theus could not help the Bulls be a good team by himself. Yesterday's game, the Bulls play the Washington Wizards. And Zach LaVine had 41 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. But the most important stat from yesterday's game with the Bulls against the Wizards was the L, as in 36 of those L's, 36 losses for the Bulls. That's the most important stat of them all. Because as great as Zach LaVine looked in yesterday's game, we've seen Zach have great games. And even back in the day, we saw Reggie Theus have great games. And the problem is that you saw these great games and you kept thinking to yourself, okay, so when will these great games manifest itself into wins? Jim Boylan does not have Otto Porter. He doesn't have Wendell Carter Jr. He does not have Chris Dunn. He does not have Lauri Markkanen, and he does not have Denzel Valentine. So the question is, if everyone was healthy, I still don't believe that the Bulls could be able to be as good as the Raptors, the Celtics, the Heat, the 76ers, not even close to the Milwaukee Bucks. The question is, if everyone was healthy, would the Bulls even be a contender of any sort in the Eastern Conference? As we talk about the Bulls with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000, the TuneIn app. You think about the teams that are ahead of the Bulls, especially those top 8 teams. And each one of those teams has a story. And they don't have a story like the Bulls and their story of every year seemingly with injuries, every year seemingly with issues. Every single year there's something going on with this team as of late in which you think, there's just no way that they can possibly contend because of something. I would just like one time for the Bulls to get on a run where you can really look at them and say, boy, this is a contender for the Eastern Conference Championship. Oh, that's right. We just went through that. And that was Tom Thibodeau when he was the head coach for the Bulls. We actually do remember a time where the Bulls were trying to get above LeBron James in the Eastern Conference and trying to contend for the Eastern Conference crown. That was under Tom Thibodeau. But many of you had a feeling that Tom Thibodeau was the problem with the Bulls because it's the head coach's issue. Would you like to have Tom Thibodeau now, who used to piecemeal his teams together with Elmer's glue and tongue depressors, trying to be able to make something out of that Bulls team with all the injuries that they had with Derrick Rose and others? You'd like to have Tom Thibodeau now because Tom would demand excellence. Jim Boylan also is a head coach that demands excellence, but in a different way because he really doesn't have much of a clue out there as a head coach. See, emotion is not coaching. Caring is not coaching. You know what coaching is? Coaching is not clapping your hands. It's not making excuses for the players. You know what coaching is? Coaching is decisiveness. Coaching is a plan. Coaching is a rotation. That's coaching. That's coaching. And everything under this umbrella of 1936 stinks from the head up. And Jim Boylan as head coach is just another one of these coaches in place that was supposed to be a difference maker for this franchise, and we don't see it. I'll give you an example of a sample of Jim Boylan. This is just from last night, right? It's amazing that now in 2020, when we have so much information at our fingertips, where you and I can be able to figure out things just based on columns, based on analysts, based on talk show hosts, based on those that are in the know, I find it interesting that even Jim Boylan can't be honest with the media, can't be honest with the fans watching. There's a lot of Sea Red Nation fans that watch this team, even though they're 19-36. Because of the good years of championships and the good years of winning division championships and the good years of memorable Bulls basketball, some continue to hold on to something special with this Bulls team by saying, you know what, one day they're going to turn it around. I don't hear that as often as I used to, but I want you to listen to Jim Boylan yesterday. First and foremost, he talks about how the Bulls lost to a really bad Wizards team.
Second group in the fourth gave us a lift, got us back in the game. They battled. We had some open, real good open looks in the fourth when it was 6-8. Those go down, it's probably a different story. But I thought it took us too long to get our defensive legs underneath us. But again, I give that second group credit for doing what they do. Zach had a great flurry, which he can do. But the combination of our turnovers and our inability to keep the ball in front of us in a one-on-one situation hurt us.
The thoughts from Jim Boylan about the loss against the Wizards. Yeah, that particular press conference I heard yesterday reminds me of 34 of the 35 others I've heard from Jim Boylan after games, because the Bulls have stockpiled 36 losses. 36 losses. Now, here's something that you got to hear. Daniel Gafford is a young player on this Bulls team, and there's plenty of young players on this team. And all I think that we want to see is for the Bulls to be able to show that they were able to draft certain players and those players can be able to pay dividends now and for the future for the team. Because you know this team is no good. They got 26, 27 games left. They may make the playoffs. I doubt it. Point is, though, is that the injuries and the ineptitude have held this team back. Listen to Jim Boylan, the head coach for the Bulls, try to wiggle around the Gafford situation.
I thought that he was available, which was good, but I didn't play him tonight. So
was he healthy enough to play?
I didn't play him tonight. I just wasn't going to play him with our two centers. So
was it because of health, or was it because you had Felicio ahead of him in the rotation?
Combination of a couple things. Yeah.
Is he still wobbly on that ankle?
I'm just he's working his way back, guys. He's available, but he's working his way back.
So I know you said after last game his chance will come. So if he is at 100%, would he get back ahead of Felicio on the rotation?
I don't know. We'll figure that out when he gets back to 100%.
He's hurt. He can't play. That's as simple as it could have been put. And can I tell you something? When you've lost KC Johnson, .. that's a major problem. You know that that's the end. When you've lost KC Johnson, who hasn't necessarily battled with Jim Boylan, he's just a reporter that just wants to know what's going on with the team. So Porter, Carter, Dunn, Markkanen, Valentine, and Daniel Gafford are not available for the Bulls because of injury. And there was Boylan, did not want to say that Gafford was not available, but said Gafford was not available because he's not 100%. That's why he didn't play yesterday. Gafford would have been nice in that mix against the Wizards, but it didn't matter. The Bulls are going to lose that game anyway. But just understand that Zach LaVine, as someone who's doing what he can to try to help the team score and try to help the team offensively, is one issue. And not necessarily in a bad way. It's just that he has kind of been the face of some of this nonsense with the Bulls. And then there's Jim Boylan, the head coach. Now, of course, Garin packs are right there. I mean, blah, blah, blah. I mean, water's wet. You know that they are an issue. And you know there has to be a reshuffling at some point of that front office. We've gone through that chapter and verse for a long time. But just to look at what we have here, as All-Star Weekend is going to be here in Chicago, and there's going to be every dignitary, every NBA former player, current player, agent, everyone comes to Chicago, and they're in cabs and Ubers and Lyfts right now listening to this show, and they're saying, man, look at all this snow coming down. Man, I know free agents really want to play here. Not only 19-36 in 10th place in Eastern Conference, but boy, I tell you what a great day for free agents to even consider Chicago with all this snow coming down, and the team sucks on top of that. Boy, what a banner day and a banner weekend for the city, right? I mean, it's just so ridiculous that we have to continue to go through this time and time again. And I don't know how that gets better. So I'll ask a question. Sean, let's open the phone lines. If you're a Bulls fan or NBA fan, I want to get your thoughts. 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our phone number. I want you to talk to me about this Bulls team, and I want to ask this question directly to you. Can the Bulls build a perennial playoff team with Zach LaVine as their best player? Think about that before you call. Tell me about how you look at Zach LaVine, because Zach LaVine, who scores a ton, he's not making anyone better. He's making himself better, but I don't see him making anyone else better. But then on top of that, it's up to the organization to make sure that LaVine has others to play with, especially if they're healthy. So can the Bulls build a perennial playoff team with Zach LaVine as their best player? Let me get your phone calls in here coming up next. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. Coming up next, I want to get your phone calls in. Also, there is someone that should be embarrassed by the way the Bulls have played. If I'm this person, I couldn't show my face. We'll talk about it next on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Follow on Twitter at TweetJHood.
27 games left for the Chicago Bulls, 19-36 on the season. Porter out, Carter out, Markkanen, they're all expected back by the start of March. Yeah, where will the season be at that point? And a six-game losing streak on top of that? Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app on the ride home. Glad that you're with me here with open phone lines for you. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. Read Joe Cowley's piece in the Sun-Times about the Bulls, the piece entitled "The Running of the Bulls Has Failed in Year 3, But the Intrigue Remains." And so he listed off four or five things that stood out to him about the remainder of the season. Talked about the end of Garpax. And again, Garpax is the most obvious thing when it comes to the Bulls. You know that there needs to be a new set of eyes on this organization. You and I both know that watching this Bulls team, because it's okay to have a new set of eyes and a new philosophy when you're struggling like the Bulls are. As Joe said, the Sun-Times first reported back in November that Gar Foreman's tenure as general manager was in trouble. That hasn't changed. He also talks about the spirit of Jim Boylan. As long as the undermanned Bulls stay competitive in games, Boylan is safe. If the Bulls are blown out the final few months and the players look disengaged, Boylan could see the ice underneath him crack. Talks about Lauri Markkanen, how Lauri Markkanen has not been happy with the current structure of the franchise this season. Talks about Otto Porter as well, and how the last thing that this rebuild can afford is Porter exercising his $28 million player option next season. That's very likely, by the way. If there's $28 million on the line, you could see Otto Porter returning to the Bulls next season, and what does that mean for your rebuild? You got to have veterans along with young players. Is Otto that guy? He hasn't been around enough to know, quite frankly. And then Chris Dunn, with that right MCL sprain he suffered against Brooklyn, and he's probably going to be out for the season. And so, once again, it's another year of just injuries on top of injuries. And then the excuse will be, well, we couldn't evaluate our players because, I don't know, we couldn't evaluate the players because they were hurt. Well, there has to be something systemically wrong about your organization that every year you're going through these devastating injuries. I understand that it was all Tom Thibodeau's fault when Derrick Rose was playing. I mean, of course, it was all Thibodeau's fault. All those minutes and all that stuff, it's all his fault. So whose fault is it now? Are we blaming Boylan for the amount of injuries, or are we not doing that now? 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. There's a name I have not mentioned that I will mention as far as that really should take the bulk of the blame for this. As we go to Hoffman Estates, here's Mike that leads us off here on ESPN 1000 with Jonathan Hood. Hello, Mike.
What's going on, Hood? How are we doing?
Well, thanks for checking in.
Good. So originally I was going to call and just say how bad, you know, Jim Boylan is and how long it's going to take for Bulls fans to actually start just getting away from actually watching Bulls, which has been happening for years. But, you know, you asked about the LaVine situation, and I do feel like LaVine has been, you know, underrated as far as a shooting guard in the league. I've always been okay with him being our starting shooting guard. But as far as the number one player and even the number two player on the Bulls to make this, you know, a franchise team of any sort, I don't think there's any chance in that. You look at all the great teams in the league right now, you know, you got the Lakers, you got whatever you think of the Clippers, you know, teams like that. If you switch their best player, their second best player with LaVine, personally, I think those teams would be substantially worse. And if you put them on a team like the Nuggets or something, yeah, maybe the team would still be good because they're extremely deep. So you would have to go to a team that's already extremely deep. I don't think he has any superstar power. I think he's a top shooting guard in the league, but not enough to build my team around for sure.
Mike, I'm glad you checked in with your viewpoint. Appreciate your phone call. Now, Mike Lee's lineup for you. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. I will tell you that you are correct that I think that Zach LaVine, I mean, it's the NBA. I mean, there's a lot of guards that can score in this league. But are you a guard that can make others better? That's the thing. And that's my question mark about him. I'm not going to hate on the numbers. The production is the production. Imagine the Bulls offense without Zach LaVine. Okay, so look at it from that standpoint. For sure, you like what he brings to the table, but he's the face, one of the faces of this issue with this Bulls team. It's like he's doing what he can do, but is he someone that would be better off on another team being that knockdown three-point shooter, that knockdown guy that could be able to give you buckets as a third or fourth option on a good team or a shooter on a bad team? You know, the old expression, I mean, even on a bad team, somebody's got to be able to get buckets. Zach LaVine's doing that. And we did that in Sacramento. He's doing that now. Mike, we appreciate your phone call, 312-332-ESPN. Milo is in Chicago Heights with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Hi, Milo.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for checking in.
Yeah, hey, I was just checking in with you, man. Like, I just want to say first that I'm really disappointed in where our franchise is going right now. You know, just really because of guard and packs doing all this stuff, but really what the bottom line is, they need to get Zach LaVine out of there, in my opinion. I think, and I love Zach LaVine, but he's just not, you know, a franchise cornerstone at this point. You know, he has a ceiling, and his ceiling is really, you know, star at this point, but I feel like if we get Joel Embiid, or even if they can pull Devin Booker out with somehow, you know, that would be a good start.
Well, it's going to, Milo, I appreciate your phone call. It's going to take multiple guys, because even with this core of young players, you still need to have veteran talent around them. And, you know, Otto Porter is just one guy. Otto Porter was the third option with that Wizards team with Wall and Beal. And when I was on the air, actually, when that deal took place, and I thought, okay, that's a nice piece to have. Sure. But just look at the roster for the Bulls and look at how much young talent they have. It's just going to still take a few years to be able to get to where they want to be. I would rather be Memphis with the young talent they have, 23-24 in a tough West. I would rather have their upside than the Bulls right now. Memphis may or may not make the playoffs. I don't think that's the point. If you have someone like Morant, who's better than Kobe White at this point in time, because Kobe still, as a young player, still is inconsistent. So sometimes he gives you something, gives you some flashes, and sometimes not. He's a shoot-first point guard. Or, if you don't want to use point guard, just a shoot-first guard. He's not trying to make anybody better right now. He's trying to be a catch-and-shoot guard. So if he's able to work himself out of that and be a much better, well-rounded guard, that's great. John Morant is a guy that is just plays with ruthless aggression and is doing a great job with Memphis. And so I'd rather have that franchise now because of its youth and its upside than the Bulls. And because, again, all the injuries and all the things that swirl around this organization, that's for sure. It's a good call, Milo. I appreciate your phone call. But, you know, with Devin Booker, Right, sure. I like Devin Booker out of the Suns, but then you still need to pair him with someone else, two or three guys. This league, you cannot do it by yourself. You have to have two or three talented guys in the starting lineup and also shooters coming off the bench in order to for you to even be close in the playoffs. So, good call, Milo. Thank you very much for checking in. There is a person that we have not talked about for the first 28 minutes of the show that really should be embarrassed. And I know that the All-Star Weekend is coming. It's right here for the All-Star Game in Chicago. But Michael Reinsdorf, who is someone that does not get enough blame because everything is about Gar and Pax. Everything is about Jim Boylan. Michael Reinsdorf has the opportunity to change things. Jerry Reinsdorf has given Michael Reinsdorf the keys to the franchise. And just because your dad is someone that is loyal and that he will continue to keep people in the organization doesn't mean that you have to. Because if Jerry Reinsdorf says, Michael, you run the Bulls and we want you to be the guy to be able to run this thing, doesn't mean you have to run it the same. You have to understand something. When you go into a meeting, especially with other owners and other GMs, and you walk in the room and they know it's Michael Reinsdorf, I'm sure a lot of them will say, hey, it's Michael Reinsdorf from the Bulls. It's great, Michael. Look how you got that United Center filled. You're in the top five in attendance. That's awesome. But you know what, though? I would be embarrassed walking in that room knowing that my team is just not good enough in a major market like Chicago. Chicago, the way that the Bulls have played, it's holding the league back some, just like the Knicks are, just like Detroit is. It's holding the league back, and that's a major, major issue for this franchise. We won't take SportsCenter here. We'll just continue to get your thoughts here. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. If I'm Michael Reinsdorf, I would be embarrassed. I would just, when I go to meetings, I would be just like, wow. Yes, I'm the face of this problem with this franchise. You know? And I couldn't walk in the room with my head held high like, yes, I'm one of the owners of the Chicago Bulls. Well, yeah, but look at the Lakers. Look at the Clippers, okay? You know, look at what's happening with Milwaukee. Just 90 minutes away with Milwaukee. Look what's happening. And then you have this. Hey, it's great that the All-Star Game's here, but what about the franchise? 19-36, and don't even have an All-Star. Don't even have an All-Star to represent the city. Says a lot for where the Bulls are, right? 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our telephone number. Let's go to Mike in Woodridge on ESPN 1000 as we talk Bulls with Jonathan Hood. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
I just want to say I'm glad you brought up Michael Reinsdorf, because with this All-Star game coming up, I'll be honest, I was looking forward to this game and this weekend, being so proud of my city in Chicago and just showing it off to the league. And I feel like it's so sad and embarrassing that we do have all this young talent, but no one wants to come here. And I think it's honestly because look at our coach. What would make you want to go play for Jim Boylan right now? I feel like he has a gaffe or two every week. I feel like he works you to death and not in a good way. I'd even say he's like a poor man's Tom Thibodeau. And I just feel like we need either a young coach or someone who players want to play for. We have the core. It's injured right now, but we have a good core here. And so I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. But, man, I was so excited for this weekend, and now it's like embarrassing almost that we don't have an all-star, which I think Levine deserved it, but I don't know. It's kind of sad.
Well, here's what I think, and I appreciate your phone call. Here's what I think. You don't feel bad for the Bulls because the Bulls are big boys. The Gar, Pax, Michael Reinsdorf, you know, those guys are supposed to bring a winner to Chicago or at least be one of the top eight teams in the East. The East has been weak for a while in years past. It's getting stronger now, but in years past, you had an opportunity to build and build towards something. This is year three of yet another rebuild for the Bulls, and look where they are right now, 19-36. Yeah, you should be excited for All-Star Weekend. You know why? Because for once, you'll see some stars at the United Center. you'll see some stars. And when the Bulls play, you don't see stars on that side of the floor. It is a actual barbershop debate to determine whether or not you think Zach LaVine's a real star or not. He's not an all-star this year, but it's really a debate on whether or not the Bulls even have a star on the team, in the franchise. So you should be excited because the best of the best are going to play. They're going to perform for All-Star Saturday, All-Star Sunday, and they're going to be here in Chicago, and that's great. But that still does not turn a blind eye to the fact that this organization is going in the wrong direction at 19-36 on year three of a rebuild. I hope Joe Colley's right. I hope Colley's right about what's happening with this team, that there's going to be a fresh set of eyes in this organization. And Gar Forman is just so removed and so far away from all this, it really lies at the feet of John Paxson and Michael Reinsdorf for me. If I'm Reinsdorf, I am embarrassed. Completely embarrassed that my franchise is 19-36. Now, the money aside, okay, you make millions and millions of dollars and people come to United Center, that's great. But what about the product on the floor? What about the product on the floor? You're not embarrassed by that? I know I am. I know exactly. I am. This is why I watch the league. If I was just watching Bulls basketball and nothing else in the league, I'd be in bad shape, horrible shape as a basketball fan. Thank goodness I could watch the Clippers and I could watch the Lakers, watch what Milwaukee's doing, watch what Toronto's doing, because that's what good basketball teams and organizations look like. This 10th place team in the East, nah, it's not happening. The Bulls held Washington yesterday to just 26 points in the fourth quarter, so they've allowed 30-plus points in 15 of the 20 quarters since Chris Dunn has been out. Coming up next, we'll get more of your phone calls coming up on the Bulls, 312-332-ESPN. Can the Bulls build a perennial playoff team with Zach LaVine as their best player? Also still to come, some thoughts about Joe Maddon and his comments and Theo's response, and also the White Sox. Hey, is there catcher-on-catcher crime coming up for 2020? We'll address it on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Theo Epstein responded to Joe Maddon. You know, I think Joe Maddon should still be managing the Chicago Cubs for the 2020 season and not the Los Angeles Angels. Talking about it right here with Under the Hood on ESPN 1000, the TuneIn app. It's all about ego. You know how big ego is in sports and business and life. You know how big ego is. And clearly, after the Cubs won the World Series and the team was going in the wrong direction as far as offense, I just thought that Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein had something going, that they could work together. You know, I saw what's happening with Los Angeles with the Angels and Mike Socia. When Socia won the championship, you couldn't get him out of that job until he left the job. He had to leave in order for him to no longer be the manager of the Angels, because when you got something going, you feel like it's going to be something special for the future. And so Maddon and Epstein parted, and I didn't like it. And Theo, I'm wondering, did he not like the job that Maddon did while the Cubs won the World Series? Or did it happen just after the Cubs won the World Series? We understand what Joe Maddon brought to the table as a manager for this team. He was a player's manager. He was experienced, and he represented the team very well. What David Ross as a manager, we know that he has no experience as a manager, but he also is respected by a lot of his peers when he played. Now, there's a big difference between Ross and Maddon, because Maddon was respected, I thought, by the team when he was a manager, either with Tampa or with the Cubs and now with the Angels. I relate this so much to Joel Quenneville when he was with the Blackhawks. After three Stanley Cup championships, I really thought that the organization would look at Joel Quenneville, give him a little bit more time to be able to reset this thing. And it just didn't happen because of the word ego. Joel Quenneville was the head coach. And yeah, the championships came in abundance with three championships. But I thought he would stay a little longer too. He was the closest thing to Phil Jackson that we have seen in the city of Chicago. Joel Quenneville as the head coach for the Blackhawks. And so for Joe Maddon to finally be the face of this franchise, winning the World Series championship, I thought, well, maybe, just maybe, Maddon could stay for 5+ years. Like 2020 maybe would be his last year, or 2021, but nope, the parting took place. And I read what Joe Maddon said on ESPN.com about how it was just time. I saw the piece and I thought, well, you know what? He's at peace because now he's with the Los Angeles Angels and he might just retire there. That might be the end for him. And he was good with it, knowing that the end was coming. He said he knew in the middle of the season that the end was coming. And that's too bad because he should have been extended. The issue with the team is I thought Theo, and I thought that some of the players that he brought in after the World Series championship was just not enough. Not a World Series hangover. I just think that that's convenience. I don't believe World Series hangover. Over what I believe in is that this team just stopped hitting for 2+ years. And Chili Davis was fired because of it. I think it's just more than just, well, there's a World Series hangover. What I believe is that it's on Theo and Jed to bring in fresher players as much as possible to insert in that lineup and also get better with your pitching, especially that bullpen, in order for you to really seriously contend. Some thoughts from Theo Epstein. Theo Epstein was talking about Maddon's approach.
Joe and I aren't exactly the same. Yeah, I think his approach was more that, you know, things will work themselves out. You know, these are great players. Let them play. These things will work out. But from our perspective, or from my perspective, there was a little bit more cause for concern. And again, it's not an everyday thing that I would try to step in and offer feedback or help or remind about expectations. But when we're falling short, not in results, but in how we're going about things, and we've talked about this before, about, you know, the type of work and preparation I think should be expected in a big league situation, then I don't think I'd be doing my job if I didn't step in.
Okay, whatever you say. I just think that Maddon should still be the manager of the team. Now we'll see what David Ross does as manager for the Cubs in 2020. I tell you one thing, if Chris Bryant's not around, then I'm going to think that there's going to be somewhat of a rebuild with this team where they build around Baez. That very well could happen. As you listen to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. What about the other side of town? What about the White Sox? So, Grandal being part of this White Sox team as a leader, as someone that is really good offensively, I'm glad that he's with the White Sox. But you remember James McCann. McCann was a leader himself last year with the White Sox. And so you know that Grandal is going to get a lot of the starts as catcher, and that puts McCann on the bench. McCann talked about his expectations, and then, of course, Grandal signing with the White Sox.
If I said we weren't trying to win a World Series, then I'd be lying. That's, you know, you go into every season with expectation to win, and this season is obviously no different, but there's a little more, you know, in regards to, you know, the moves that were made in the offseason. It's win now, and it's not just get to the playoffs, it's win a World Series.
What do you think the key is to handling those higher expectations than you guys have been used to around here?
No, it's just day-to-day. You can't focus too much on the future, and you can't live in the past. You have to win each day, and if you win each day, at the end of the season, you'll be exactly where you need to be.
Do you expect to move around more now that Yasmani's here?
I'm just here doing my job. Whatever they ask me to do, I'll be willing to do.
What was your reaction this offseason when you saw the Grandal acquisition versus how you feel about it now? Is there a difference?
It is what it is. There's things about the business that you can't control. All you can control is how you handle your own self and how you handle your own preparations, and that was my main focus throughout the offseason, and that'll, you know, continue to be my main focus is how to make myself better and how to help the team win.
The Chicago White Sox, how about that?
Thoughts there from James McCann. He's not happy. But, I mean, yeah, it is what it is when you have Grandal, who's better than you. McCann could still be the catcher for Giolito, one of the starters for the White Sox, and he also could still be a contributor as a DH, first baseman, do a lot of different things. So if I'm McCann, I don't have my head down. He's part of something special that just adds to a very good White Sox team, especially on the surface on paper. So Grandal is the guy. Of course, Grandal is better than McCann. But McCann, What he did last year proved to me that he could be with this ball club and he could still help this White Sox team. Coming up, of course, you know, at 7:45, we've got Northwestern basketball as they take on Michigan. How good has Chicago's own Juwan Howard been as head coach for Michigan? We talk about that coming up next on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Hi, everybody.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Go!
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. We turn to the Northwestern Wildcats color analyst, Joey Meyer, as we'll have Michigan against Northwestern coming up at 7:45 right here on ESPN 1000. Coach, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
It's always good to be on.
Coach, I want to get your thoughts about the state of the Big Ten this season. Where do you place the Big Ten versus others in college basketball? So, seems like from top to bottom, it's pretty tough.
You know, it's interesting. It's top to mid-bottom. Is that the way to say it?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
that's fair.
Northwestern's struggling a little bit. Nebraska's struggling a little bit. There's some teams down at the bottom, but one through about eight or nine. I mean, but actually, people are telling me 11 teams are going to get in, and that's just really a lot of teams to be able to get in the tournament. I don't know what the record is, but that's got to be up there.
So, I mean, I look at Northwestern as one of the most, tough luck teams that I've seen, not just in the Big Ten, but in college basketball, these close losses. So if you're Coach Collins, do you take solace in saying that you're close and you got to get ready for next season and hopefully the team gets tougher? How do you read it if you're Collins? Because they've had some games where they've been right there in the mix to win the game and then fall short at the end.
Well, as a former coach, to keep your sanity, you got to start saying, man, these old guys are really young, and they're showing that they're going to be really good, but we got to get to that point. And so we're going to have to go through some rough, tough times, and it's hard. I mean, sitting there, you know, you feel for them because they're there. They just don't quite have the experience, the depth, the physicality. It seems like they're right there, and then the other team, like Maryland, will take it to another level that Northwestern just doesn't have yet. And so it is very frustrating to show the talent to be there, but then the other team, a little more experience, a little more athleticism, and they just seem to pull away at the end.
Michigan against Northwestern starting at 7:45 right here on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000, color analyst for the Wildcats. Coach Joey Meyer with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. With Michigan with Juwan Howard, I thought, Coach, that after being with Miami under the tutelage of Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley, that I thought that he was going to be in line for an NBA job. As a matter of fact, I might have mentioned several times on the show that, boy, if the Bulls are looking for a head coach before Boylan was put in place, maybe they should look at Juwan Howard, Chicago guy, that spent a lot of time with the Heat. But when he goes from an NBA player to an assistant coach to the head of Michigan, what do you think of how he's able to get into this position right now? What has he done well, do you think?
Well, I think what's interesting, what he said was, before he took the Michigan job, there's only one job he'd go to college for. And Michigan came up, mm-hmm. and that's his alma mater, that's his first love, blah, blah, all that. Otherwise, I think you would have been accurate. I think he would have stayed in the NBA for a couple of years and be a head coach. But, you know, he fell in love with Michigan. I think it's really hard. I mean, we talk about how hard it is for college coaches to go to pros, and you see the difference. And there's just a ton of difference. Well, there's a lot of difference between pros and being a college coach with a lot of nuances with recruiting, with alumni, with boosters, with jobs. There's just a lot of other things that you have to adjust to, not just coaching. But I think the one thing that he has done a tremendous job with, and just watching his teams, I went and watched him practice. I've seen him play. Camaraderie. I mean, you can see those guys really like him. I mean, he's tough on them, don't get me wrong, but you can tell he's got a great relationship with those players.
I've been seeing a ton of college basketball, Coach. I'm looking at this season, and I'm smiling when I look at this season because I believe that it is important for just the common fan to be able to turn on a college basketball game and say, you know, I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but I'm going to be tuned in. College basketball is more than just March. It's about the regular season and seeing upsets or seeing thrilling games. We just saw Illinois-Michigan State at the end, which was a terrific game in Champaign. But I think that parity is going to be the winner here for college basketball, because even getting closer to March, I'm not sure who the best team in college basketball is. Do you?
No, there's no – there's 12, 13 teams I think could get to the Final Four, maybe more. I just think who you match up against, there's no super stud team that you can say, hey, they're going to get there. You know, even with Zion last year, everybody thought, you know, Duke was going to get it just really hard with the way it's constructed, the NCAA one and done. But now the parity in talent is also equal. So it's not like it's going to be a great upset if some of these teams get there, and it's going to make for a real interesting year. I think some people who are going to win this their pools this year, people that know nothing about basketball.
Yes,
you got a lot of options this year.
It certainly is the case. Is Maryland one of the best teams that you see in college basketball this year?
I'll be honest with you, they can be frustrating. You know, they're good enough to win it all. Let's get that on the table right away. But there's games where you say, where are you at? What happened? I think the last few, they've started to turn it to where they should be. I think they're starting to play. I think they have enough Jalen Smith and Cowan. And I think they have enough talent to win it all. I don't think they played consistently. But you tell me who's played consistently, maybe besides Baylor, who I got to see early in the year, and right away I fell in love with that team. Now, they again, another team that could get beat, but another team that has guards, plays defense. Those kind of teams are real tough to beat when it comes to tournament time.
Coach Joey Meyer, Wildcats color analyst with Jonathan Hood, as it'll be Michigan taking on Northwestern 7:45 tonight right here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. So I got to ask, when you were coaching, how difficult was it for Chicago area schools or statewide schools to come together to form a tournament? Was that ever brought up when you were coaching?
Yeah, we had some tournaments, the Chicagoland Classic and things like that. They really didn't gel as well as people would think. I'll be honest, I think Chicago's more about winning than it is about your team. You know what I mean? The locality. I think if you're a winning team, you draw in Chicago. If you don't win in Chicago, you don't draw. I think it's a tough market. It's a big city market. I mean, look at all the pro teams. It's hard to compete with all that. So, yeah, we tried. We had a couple of Chicago guys. They didn't draw real well. It's a difficult thing to do. On paper, boy, does it make sense, doesn't it? I mean, it's like,
yeah.
Why not? Why don't you do this? And yet, I don't think it really was. Now, maybe times have changed. Been a long time as a side coach. So, you know, things may have changed a little bit, but I think it is very hard to draw in Chicago unless you have one thing, unless you're winning.
Hey, look, it works well in Indiana, right, with the Crossroads Classic.
Crosstown Classic.
Yeah, it works well, doesn't it?
It really does. But let's put the big state schools, they got big alumni bases, and it's really interesting how close everybody is to it. You know, when you go in Indianapolis, Purdue's right there. Butler's in the city. Indiana would draw anywhere. Purdue, what is it, 45 minutes? You know, everything's right there. And, you know, maybe it's worth trying again, but that's a way above my pay grade here, Jonathan. You want to pay me to put that together now? We might have a little conversation. But, yeah, that'll be interesting. The other thing is, look at all the conference games teams play now. If you're in the Big Ten, how do you have room? You know, then you got, the ACC Classic, you know, the Big Ten, Big East, Big, you know, there's so many different little conferences that are playing. There's not many games left. And then, of course, you want to buy a couple games and make sure you get some W's. It's hard to fit all that in.
I just think some of these coaches are scared. I'm not going to give a name. I'm just saying that some of these kids, they're so scared that they'll ruin their RPI, their ranking in the non-conference. Hey, it really counts in your conference games. Yeah, you may lose one or two games in non-conference. So what? At least you're appeasing the Chicagoland area fan that can see something they never thought they'd see before. You know, come on, come together, Coach. I think you and I can make a mint. I think you and I, if we put this together, I'm telling you, that's some extra cash right there on the table.
Hey, it's going to be a little hard to do now. You know, every school's got its own agenda. You got to remember that.
Yeah, that's true.
They got a little agenda going on where it's best for them, and I don't blame them because, you know, that's what's important, what's best for them. So, yeah, you got to bring together some different coaches from different schools. And, you know, and I think there'd be coaches that usually where the coach that really wants it is the one that's maybe down a little bit and wants mm-hmm. that opportunity. The one that's on top says, why do I risk that? Because if I lose, I got nothing to gain. I win, I'm supposed to. If I lose, look what happened. You lost to the local school. So there's a lot of nuances that go on in deciding if you're going to play that game.
Coach, thank you so much. I hope to talk again soon.
Okay.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Live from the First Midwest Bank Studio on State Street, this is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Jonathan Hood. WMVP Chicago. This is Under the Hood on ESPN 1000. Follow at @TweetJHood on Twitter.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
And all of our guests are going to be on the Corona Hotline. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the TuneIn app at 7:20. We'll talk to a four-time NBA champion. Good old number 32, Will Perdue, will be on the program getting his thoughts on the first half of the Bulls season. Glad that you're in with me here on ESPN 1000. Let me ask you a question. If there was someone that was going to offer you double the money that you make, would you take it? It's going to be in the same city, probably in the same vocation that you work in. If you were offered double the money, would you take it? So that is exactly what happened with Mel Tucker, who is now the new head coach for the football team for Michigan State. So here's how the story went. So there it was, Michigan State. Somehow Mark D'Antonio all of a sudden just goes away. He does not doesn't want to be the head coach of Michigan State anymore, so there's an opening. And so I thought that D'Antonio was going to be around for at least another 3-4 years, but just suddenly, out of nowhere, he leaves the job at Michigan State. That's a plum job in the Big Ten. And then, of course, there is an opening. They go to several different people. They turn it down, and they go to Mel Tucker. Now, if you're not a college football fan, the last time you heard Mel Tucker's name is when he was a defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears. But as someone who is a college football fan like me, I know Mel Tucker very well because he's a defensive coordinator for my Georgia Bulldogs team. And also has been around the college game for quite a few years. He was just the head coach for the Colorado Buffaloes. And I saw Mel Tucker say just a day ago that even though Michigan State's job was open, that he was going to stay with the Colorado Buffaloes, that he said he was very flattered. He was very happy that, you know, people were wondering whether or not he's going to take the Michigan State job. And so he does not take the job. And so all of a sudden, after going 5-7 with Colorado and says that I'm very flattered, I'm not going to take the Michigan State job, he takes the Michigan State job. Just like that. Adam Rittenberg had this first on ESPN and said Michigan State has hired Mel Tucker, who resigned as Colorado's head coach earlier Wednesday. Tucker's 6-year contract with the Spartans, which was formally approved by the university's board late Wednesday afternoon, is worth $30 million. He got his salary doubled just like that from Colorado to Michigan State. And Bill Beekman, who is the athletic director of Michigan State, says it gives me great pleasure to welcome Mel Tucker to the Spartan family. But again, just 24 hours before this, Mel Tucker said, I'm very flattered to be able to be in the circle and thought of as the next Michigan State coach, but we've got some unfinished business to tend to. And you can just tell over the last 24 hours, Michigan State just kept upping the ante over and over again, saying, how much will it take for you to come to Michigan State? Because the Spartans are embarrassed at this point. They want to have a good coach in place at Michigan State. And so $30 million, 6-year contract with the Michigan State Spartans to not only take over the job, but take over the job for someone who's been in the job for a long time. a long time. And so here it is. Mel Tucker is the head coach. And so here's the scuttlebutt if you've missed it today. People are wondering, is Mel Tucker wrong for leaving Colorado in the lurch to take the Michigan State job? I just want to tell you this. If a different employer would double your salary, would you leave? And if it's me, and I'm definitely considering it for sure. I've had loyalty to ESPN 1000 for 15 years. I've been here for a long time. But of course, it makes you think, because even though when people say it's not about the money, it's also always about the money. You'll hear this all the time from athletes and business people. They'll tell you that, you know, is it about the money? Of course, it's about the money. It always is. And so when I look at Mel Tucker is a capitalist like many of us. And says, man, if I can get my money doubled, now I have generational wealth. I don't know if Mel Tucker even had that to start with, but he certainly has it now. It doesn't matter if he stays in the job or not, if he's fired after a couple of years, he's got that money in his pocket, like Willie Taggart had that money in his pocket at Florida State, and so many others that get fired or leave quickly. And so it comes to the question about loyalty, right? Loyalty. How can Mel Tucker walk away from this job? How can he walk away from this job in Colorado after he said that's about loyalty, that he's going to stay, and that he wasn't going to leave Colorado? And what about all those recruits? Drew Pearson, so mad. He's so upset because he has someone in his family that committed to Colorado and Mel left to take the Michigan State job. Well, let me tell you something. The Michigan State job is a better job than the Colorado job. That's number one. If you had your druthers on which job you want the Michigan State job because it's the Big Ten, and it's a prestigious job. He's got big shoes to fill, but because the money's that good, you're going to leave. I find it interesting that those that are against Mel Tucker doing this is saying that you should stay with Colorado because of the loyalty of the program. What loyalty? The same loyalty in college sports in which a kid can, out of high school, can sit there at a table, a lunch table in his gym, and shuffle around four or five hats and then decide, no, it's not Georgia. Nope, it's not Florida. Nope, it's not Alabama. I'm going to Ole Miss. I mean, it just, you get a kid can shake your hand and say, I am going to go to your program. I'm going to be playing for your team. And all of a sudden, nah, the handshake doesn't matter. No, the verbal commit doesn't matter. I'm going to go someplace else. So that same college coach can do the same thing. There's no loyalty on either side of the street on this, by the way. These are just facts that I'm giving. It's not opinion. It's just facts. For a college kid now that has the opportunity to have that portal system where he can hopscotch from place to place, because now in college football and college basketball, we have gotten into this AAU type of feeling, this feeling that like AAU, like I got to be with all the talented players in order for me to be able to be comfortable. Well, same thing with coaches. Nah, you know, you would love for him to be able to ride out the whole time with Colorado, but he saw the money on the table and could not turn it down. Doubled his money. For Mel Tucker, who I don't even think I don't think he's that good a coach as a head coach. He was just average at Colorado. If he stays around a program, maybe he can grow this Michigan State program. But if they're going to offer you the money, you got to take it. You got to take it. I don't think he's going to lose one night of sleep over his decision. There's going to be a lot of Colorado Buffalo fans that are not happy that he left, but I'm sure it went down like this. Okay, so even though he tweeted out that he is going to stay with Colorado, I'm sure that the agent for Mel Tucker went to Colorado and said, look, here's the money on the table, right? Like, if you can surpass the $30 million six-year contract for me to stay, then I'll stay. But this is what Michigan State's offering me. And so Colorado probably looks at the below-average record for Mel Tucker and says, well, if you get $30 million over a six-year contract with the Spartans, you probably should just go and take it. And Mel's like, yeah, but what about these recruits? And Colorado said, well, we can't match that. And so he leaves and goes to Michigan State. It's just like that. Just like that. And remember, the loyalty in general should be a two-way street. Kids did sign up to play for Mel Tucker. There's no doubt. But it's almost like card subject to change, like when you go to a pro wrestling, boxing, or MMA event. Card subject to change. Just because he's in the program now doesn't mean that he won't quit or get fired tomorrow. you might have signed up and you might have said, you know what, I like Coach Tucker, I want to play for him, and he's gone. Well, that doesn't, it affects you if you want to go someplace else, but you're a Colorado Buffalo. So no matter who the coach is, you should step in there and be able to show what you can do. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the TuneIn app. Some thoughts from Sean Farnham. Sean Farnham from ESPN, who is a college basketball analyst, talked a little bit about Tucker. He says he doesn't fault Tucker because now the transfer rule needs to be fixed.
I don't fault him, and I think that he should be allowed to take this job, and I think that we shouldn't criticize him for wanting to go to a location that is going to double his salary and give him better amenities and better support him to be successful as a head coach, which is what he wants to be and what he has done. But at the same time, I think that if we're going to do that, then the NCAA very simply can fix this all and start making this better. First of all, anyone that signed a national letter of intent in this class, you're now free to look at anywhere else you want to go immediately. There's no waiver papers that you need to sign. You're released from your scholarship or your national letter of intent immediately that you can go look elsewhere. And the one-time transfer rule needs to be put in. It should have been put in already. We've been talking about it for over a year now. Just put it in and allow these kids to transfer if that's indeed what they want to do. It's not hard. If a head coach does this stuff, you should have the availability to do it one time.
Sean Farnham. Yeah, if a university is going to double your salary, then you take it. So everyone could be a capitalist except for Mel Tucker? What the hell is that? What kind of nonsense is that? You go get that money if it's available to you. And guess what? For those of you that want to be on social media going after Mel Tucker or other coaches for doing this, yeah, the loyalty works both ways. It's a small L when it comes to loyalty in sports and business. Mel Tucker's going to take this job, and who knows what he's going to do at Michigan State, but I know one thing, he's paid. Generationally, he's paid. So there's Drew Pearson, right? He's got a family member that signed up to be with Colorado, that is locked in with Colorado, thinking that Mel Tucker's going to be there. And now Drew Pearson got on social media, said that pretty much that Mel Tucker's a fraud, meaning that he's a bad guy for leaving the program to go to Michigan State. Some thoughts from Will Cain on the Will Cain Show.
Mark D'Antonio left his job as the head coach of the Michigan State Spartans. Mel Tucker at Colorado is going to take the job. And that means some people are very, very upset, including, by the way, Dallas Cowboy legend Drew Pearson. He tweeted this out, all caps, "Mel Tucker is a con man." There are many, many people affected by this decision. You're right. For anybody that points it out, that we would choose to do the same thing. We would better our lives. That's fine. You could also point out everybody does it, and that's fine. But you can also ask that other people that you interact with be truthful and honest. If Drew Pearson is right, that he sat down with Mel Tucker, and as his grandson was looking to commit to a program, was told there is no way I'm leaving, Drew Pearson has a right to be upset.
Sure, he can be mad, but it's already done now. Mel is on the plane. He was introduced this evening as the head coach of Michigan State. And so that's that with that. But I do want to make sure it's very clear that in this society that we live in, you and I are working every day to be able to take care of ourselves and our family, to be able to keep the lights on in our place, to be able to work as hard as possible so we can retire early or to be able to do whatever we want to do with our lives. Mel Tucker's doing the same thing. Ah, Mel Tucker, you should have stayed in Colorado and take less money just to stay with those kids. Why? Those kids can leave when they want to. Why can't he? Will Perdue on the Bulls in the NBA next on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
How you doing?
Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. Here we are, All-Star Weekend is here. The family of NBA superstars, past and present, and media, everything else is going to ascend upon here in Chicago. We turn to a four-time NBA champion, analyst for NBC Sports Chicago for the Bulls. It is good old number 32, Will Perdue. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. Will, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, absolutely, Jonathan. That's what we need right here, my man. We struggle to get free agents as it is, and now we have not really blizzard-like conditions, but I live in the West Loop. I can't even see the buildings downtown, and it's supposed to be below zero on Friday. I'm sure they're all going to be chomping at the bit to come here as a free agent.
Okay, so let's start here. So when you played, you just wanted the opportunity to play anywhere, no matter where it was. You didn't. I mean, I'm sure players in your era prefer to play someplace warm if they could. No state tax in Florida and Texas. I'm sure that that was something they thought about, but you just want an opportunity to play. Now in 2020, we fast forward to that, and I just think that there are a number of free agents or young players that's going to be in this league that looks at Chicago like we're in Siberia, or looks at Minneapolis, St. Paul with the Timberwolves, or Indiana, or places here in the Midwest, and they think, not so sure. I wonder how much is that a factor when they're trying to figure out where they want to go?
Well, when you're not winning, it's a big factor. Because you notice the team you didn't mention? Milwaukee. They're north of us. But I think right now, if you asked a lot of free agents, they would want to go to Milwaukee. Because why? The best record last year. Currently sitting on the best record this year. You know, they've made some changes. It seems like that the organization is fully committed to being a contender. I didn't say winning championships, but a contender. So, you know, as a young player, as you talk about, and let's be honest here, it's a players' league now. The players are the ones with the power. Unfortunately, you know, things have kind of swapped a little bit. You know, when I was playing, it was teams had more power. So maybe you still had choices, but you didn't have the power that you do now as a free agent where you can pick and choose. So, you know, if a team's winning, players have a tendency to look past some obstacles. And weather is one of those obstacles because not everybody can play in, as you talked about, Miami, Orlando, Atlanta, Golden State, L.A., Sacramento, Dallas, you know, going down all the warm destinations. And I mean, New Orleans right now is a hot spot because of Zion and Brandon Ingram and how well they're playing. But, you know, as a team and an organization, you want to try to eliminate as many variables as possible. When you're not winning and things aren't looking good, all those variables now become bright red flashing signs. And players look at all those variables and like, man, do I really want to put up with that?
When I look at Milwaukee, obviously, when we watch them every night, even without Giannis sometimes, the Bucks just continue to just roll over opponents. How close do you think the Raptors are to Milwaukee in the East?
I tell you, that's the surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that they've won 15 in a row, the fact that they continue to just churn out wins, the fact that they've continued to develop players. You know, they lost the best player in the league. It reminds me a lot of was it 94 when we lost MJ and we still went to the Eastern Conference Finals and, you know, lost on Chippewa Hall. Mm-hmm. But they're just kind of doing the same thing. It just tells you just how good they are and, how good Siakam is and how good they've identified talent, how they've developed talent. Put talent together that plays well together. I just feel like right now the difference is the style that Milwaukee plays. They have the right players. I feel like Giannis, last year's MVP, even though a lot of people surprisingly aren't talking about him as this year's MVP, I think he's actually having a better season, and they have better players around him. I just feel like that, you know, Milwaukee right now is the favorite because of Middleton. And how much better he's gotten. And he's going to be an all-star this year. So I think they're close. Boston's close. Philly, we don't know about. They're hot and cold. They step up and they kick everybody's ass, that, you know, the teams that are supposedly the cream of the crop, but then they can't win a game on the road. So, you know, they're like Jekyll and Hyde. But everybody, in my opinion, as you just pointed out, is still chasing the Milwaukee Bucks.
Boy, the best point of that, Will, is the Middleton comment. You get a consistent Middleton, then the sky's the limit, because there are times we saw Middleton in every second or third game he was good, then kind of disappear, let others be able to score the ball. But boy, that's such a big factor. As much as we see how great Giannis is, Middleton has to be that Robin to Antetokounmpo's Batman.
You're right, but also, that's where now you can start talking about the Greek Freak. As good as he was last year, the MVP, we know how much work he put in the offseason. So what does that do? That motivates your teammates, because now if you're on that level and respect first, let's not talk about, hey, whether you like a guy or not. Let's talk about the fact that you respect your teammate. And if you respect your teammate and you know how hard your teammate's going to work, you don't want to let your teammate down. So you're going to work just as hard because you're like, hey, we were good last year. We want to be better this year. So you look yourself in the mirror and you're like, what are my weaknesses? What do I have to work on? And as you talked about for Middleton, it was about what do I need to do to be more consistent? So I'm there every night and not just 60 to 70 nights.
Will Perdue, four-time NBA champion, analyst for NBC Sports Chicago with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. What do you like most about this year's Bulls team?
Well, they got individual talent. What they haven't been able to do is identify, figure it out, put the guys together, stay healthy. I mean, I can go down the list. You know, I like Zach LaVine. What, he dropped 41. Yes. Last night against Washington, 41-42. I'm not sitting here saying that, and I feel like he should be an all-star, quite honestly, but I'm not saying, you know, he's a guy that can carry a team throughout a whole season. But what he is a guy that if you can get yourself to the fourth quarter, he can give you 19 straight. He can give you 20 straight. And that's what helps you win ball games. So now you have to ask yourself, do they have the right pieces? I like, you know, what Lowry has shown us, but an ability to stay healthy and consistent. You know, like you talk about, kind of like what you're talking about with Middleton. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. Gives you 12 points in the first quarter and ends with 14. That can't happen. You know, I think their defense is a little aggressive for the players and the personnel that they have, but Boylan is bound and determined to play that way. So, you know, you have to make a choice. Are you going to pick a system and then go out and find the players to fit that system? Are you going to take the players you have and adapt the system to those players to help them win ball games? Because on a piece of paper, this team has individual talent. They have strengths. They obviously have a lot of weaknesses. But what this organization has not been able to do is, one, stay healthy, B, figure out how to put these guys on the floor together and figure out a proper rotation so they can win games. I understand there's been a lot of, you know, injuries, significant injuries to the core players. But at the end of the day, they should have a lot more wins than 19.
If there were no injuries, are the Bulls a top six team in the East?
I don't know, because, you know, I keep wanting to ignore it. I keep wanting to deny it. But they are young, mm-hmm. and they're going to continue to make mistakes as a young team. They're definitely a playoff team. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it if they're healthy. I just, you know, and I wish I could sit here and give you a definitive answer, but I'm just not sure. Because, and the reason why I say that is because the schedule was set up for them to get off to a really good start. You know, I don't want to sit here and say it was easy, because, listen, it's the NBA. You got talent on every roster, regardless of how good the team is. You have individual talent. But they were set up for success early. Cleveland, Charlotte, you know, teams that they should have beaten because they were teams that they're better than. And they struggled to do that. Instead of going 6-3, they went 3-6. I think that hurt this team's morale. I think it hurt, you know, the confidence that some of these guys had going into the season. And then guys started getting hurt, and it's just like they've never been able to get out of the hole.
I look at Kobe White, and I'm wondering, Will, if we're going to see Kobe in the starting role. And when people mention this to me here in the first half of the season, I say, well, there are times that Kobe White is getting starters' minutes. It doesn't matter if he's being announced or not at the beginning of the game, but I would love to see what that looks like with this group because of the injuries to Markkanen and Chris Dunn, because this is a top draft pick that's got to grow. How would you analyze Kobe White so far in the league?
Inconsistent. Like most rookies. You know, he went through that stretch about a 10-game stretch in January where he was really struggling to knock down shots. The last few games, that has improved. You know, we did a thing prior to the Wizards game, you know, talking about Kobe, doing our own evaluations, talking about how he's a two-guard. Or he's not even a two-guard. He's just a scoring guard. That's his mentality. And then I think he had, what, 6 or 7 assists in that game? So we're like, hey, maybe he is. No, he's not. He is a scoring mentality player. But as you pointed out, I'm not necessarily asking for him to start, but we need to get Lowry healthy. Can he be on the floor at the same time as Zach and Lowry and Otto Porter and Wendell Carter Jr.? Or is he better off, and is the organization and the team better off of him playing the Manu Ginobili role of being a sixth man, a guy that comes off and immediately gives you that scoring punch, that threat? There's nothing wrong with that because, as you pointed out, he's still, as of late, playing over 30 minutes. He's playing starter minutes. He's just not starting. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing you got to ask. What if you take him, let's fast forward, and say we now get through the injuries and we're coming into next year. What if you take him off the bench? Then all of a sudden you have no scoring punch. So that is, in turn, you know, that's kind of trying to make a negative into a positive, but then you actually, you know, make it into a negative because now your bench is weak because all your scorers are in the starting five. So you have to find a good balance.
Well, I'm looking forward to All-Star Weekend, and let's see what happens in the second half of the season, Will. I appreciate your time, as always.
All right, man. And the one thing we're hanging our hat on is hopefully Zach does well in the three-point contest.
Yeah. That's all we can do right now. That's the only positive. Thank you, my friend.
All right. You got it, Jonathan. Thank you.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Hi, everybody.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Time for Tales from the Hood, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at Welsh Ryan Arena. You can go online for tickets, nusports.com, nusports.com, for Northwestern Wildcats basketball. We have Northwestern Wildcats basketball coming your way. They take on Michigan coming up at 7:45 tonight, right here on ESPN 1000. So our special Tales from the Hood is Charles Barkley with Waddle and Sylvie. So a great show, great conversation between Waddle, Sylvie, and Charles Barkley. Here's a part of their conversation about the 1993 NBA Finals.
Well, that's these lies that Michael played golf with me every day and buttered me up. We never played golf.
Never.
Never played golf during the finals.
Well, who's telling this story?
Oh, you know, there's been rumors out there for years that Michael buttered Patrick Ewing and myself up when he played against us. And I'm like, first of all, that's not true. And if you know Michael, there's no person you want to beat more than him. But for years, there's been people saying, well, the reason they lost is Charles played golf with Michael every day, and I played pretty good after game one. That was my fault, game one. I wasn't aggressive. I tried to let the game come to me. I should have been more aggressive.
But because I've heard those stories that, hey, those middle three games, even though you guys did well, you guys won 2 of 3 here and forced the game 6, but that had been a rumor that, hey, Charles and Michael are golfing on the off days or before even a game or something like that. I'd heard
that. Where do you think that rumor started?
Guys in the media who make up stuff as they go. You know, it's fun. Like, I love when you see these guys get on TV. So I was talking to somebody in their camp or somebody in the NBA or – no, you weren't. You're just making up stuff on TV.
Let's blame it on Wilbon. He's coming by in a little bit. Let's blame that rumor on him see how he responds.
Listen, you got to leave the Godfather alone. You know, the Godfather is
– oh, that's what you call Wilbon?
I call him the Godfather.
The Godfather?
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. You know, he's been like a big brother to me. I got to know Mike really well when he did my last couple books. And my books are so personal to me I mean, because I'm not going to open up to strangers. I'm just not built like that. On stuff that's important and significant. And Mike is one of the few guys that I can tell him exactly what I'm thinking and speak from the heart. And he's been there. I mean, the dude won't leave Arizona now. Man. Dude, I didn't want you to move here. I wanted you to come out here and do the book with me. I didn't want you to move here. Like, hey, I'm in Arizona. I'm like, again? Yeah, I bought a house here. I'm like, yo, man, I said come do my books, not move out this way.
Is he stalking you?
No.
Okay.
He's been a great friend.
Have you ever had to call him and say you got this wrong? It's this way, or does he normally have everything the way it needs to be had?
No, because I did 5 books, and they all been very personal. They all been serious. When I wrote that book, Who's Afraid of a Large Black Man, it was really personal. When I sit down with President Obama, before he was president, he was running for Senate here. When I sit down with Tiger, Morgan Freeman, Ice Cube, Sam Jackson, President Clinton, Marita Golden, Marion Wright Edelman, George Lopez to get a Hispanic perspective, a couple of rabbis to get a Jewish perspective, and I said, I need you to know I want to write a positive book on race. And when me and Mike left those meetings, we were exhausted mentally.
Yeah.
Because I said, I need you to trust me. I'm writing. I mean, we got enough idiots and fools and jackasses who try to use race as a weapon. I want to write a positive book because there's no reason we should not be getting along. I mean, there's no reason we should dislike somebody because of their skin color. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So in the book, I've actually had, last time I counted, I've had like 55 copies had our book mandatory reading, and that meant a lot to me. But Mike's been there.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this then. It was something that was a great ad campaign, but it was something that you've told us through the years is very true about you as a role model, mm-hmm. and that teachers need to be the role models and parents. But you're writing this book, and you're teaching people. And then I see you go over to the group of kids over here when they first come in. You're the first guy who goes over to the group of kids, and you're welcoming them. And then the guy in the soccer jersey over here, the kid, you're bringing him on stage. The way you talk to people and the way you treat them, I think you're wrong. I think you are a role model.
Well, a couple of things. I think when you're famous, and I don't want to get into semantics about famous or well-known, I think you should always be nice because people are going to meet you. You don't know what kind of day they're having. You might can brighten their day. And kids are always special. As far as the role model thing, when I went to Nike about that commercial, I said, hey, I got an idea. I want to do this commercial. And they said, are you crazy? I said, no, I want to do this commercial, and I'll explain it. But they said, like, Charles, this is a bad idea. I said, no, it's going to be a great idea. I said, because what I'm learning through all, you know, a lot of players, we go speak at different schools. And I was concerned about young black kids because I think they're brainwashed to think they can only be entertainers and jocks. I don't think they think they can be doctors, lawyers, engineers, teachers, firemen, policemen, and things like that. And I knew when I made the commercial, it was going to be controversial. And Nike, I said, hey, I don't mind taking heat. And the one thing Nike has always said to me, 90% of the letters they got were positive. I said, I'm not trying to, you hear people like, well, he's trying to evade being a role model. I said, dude, I'm just trying to spark conversation because I want these young black kids to know, like, yo, man, we don't have to play sports. First of all, you're not going to play sports. Your mom and dad are 5'2". you're not going to play sports. I'm not here to bust your bubble. You better get your education.
Right.
But I just wanted to start a debate because, like I say, man, you ain't got to play a pro sport or be a rapper. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, teacher, fireman, policeman, something like that. I mean, it drives me crazy when you speak to these kids like, yo, man, you ain't got to put, like I say, I hope everybody could play in the NBA. It's a pro sport. But at some point, you have to be realistic. And the way to be successful is with your education.
How gratifying is it for you to have somebody tell you, a young person, a young adult, that you've had a positive impact on their life by one of the books you've written or one of the messages that has been prominent?
It means a great deal because, like I say, you know, I cannot believe if I had to sit down as a little kid and say, well, this is how I want my life to be, I'd be like, are you crazy? Like, man, I'm so lucky and blessed about the things I've accomplished and hopefully continue to accomplish. But I've exceeded all my expectations. I mean, I've exceeded all my expectations. It's been crazy.
Well, what's on your list of to do if you say what's, you know, the things you hope to achieve going forward? What's number one on that list?
Well, I've been giving a lot of money away, and I like it.
We're talking to wonderful causes, yeah. Not to casinos, right?
No, not to casinos.
Very good. Right, okay.
Good
I'm just making sure, yeah.
No, so so I just gave my fourth $1 million to Historically wow. Black College. I'm really proud of that. A million dollars to Wounded Warriors.
Yeah.
Really proud of that. I just started two programs in Alabama where I'm giving black women $1 million to do IT startups. That's really cool. And the one that's kind of driving me crazy, young black men, I'm starting a program. I'm giving them $1 million to learn to be carpenters and electricians and plumbers. But they've been driving me crazy because they don't seem too enthusiastic about it. And it drives.
What's the biggest complaint?
They don't want to dig in anybody's toilet, or it's cold outside, or it's hot outside. I'm like, yeah, but what else are you going to do? And it's been frustrating. So what happened was about a couple years ago, when my mother died, I built my mother and my grandmother. I built them a house when I got to the NBA. And they both died, and I wanted to keep the house in the family. So I was asking my homeboys, do we know any black carpenters, electricians, and plumbers? They're like, no, we actually don't.
Some thoughts there from Charles Barkley. You can hear that in its entirety. Go to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast page. On our new app, the ESPN Chicago app. We thank you for listening and being part of the program right here on ESPN 1000. We got Northwestern basketball coming up next. I'm with you tomorrow night, 7 to 10, right here on ESPN 1000.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.